Hello friends, we are back again here with the Sports Bench, and this is the World Cup, so obviously this is the World Cup edition going on. The second matches of the first round have started for all the groups, and of course we are going to stop that vuvuzela playing in the background, which is drowning my voice. Thank you. Yes friends, with the second matches having started, we are closing in on the business end of the World Cup. Teams have got warmed up to the climate. Teams have sized up the opposition, and some like England and Spain have also been cut down to size by lesser known opponents. So we thought it's a good time to take a look back at the first week of events, and we have two very pleasant, genial and well-informed personalities with us here. You have already heard them in the earlier podcast. First of all, Jan Roskat, the Dutchman who is now settled in Australia. He is online with us from near to Brisbane. Hi Jan again.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody.
Fingers tightly crossed, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. A couple of hours and the game will start.
Listeners should read his blogs on netherlands.worldcupblog.org. When games like the first few matches get boring, he puts up photographs of beautiful women fans on his blog, so to make it interesting, I guess.
That's true.
The other individual that we have is Arnav Chaudhary. He is here from Cologne in Germany. Arnav, you've been busy with the blogging and reporting, so it is really nice of you to have spared time for us again.
No problem. Good morning, everybody.
Listeners in India watching the World Cup on ESPN in Asia must have seen Arnav on air with that lovely lady host on your screen ahead of Germany's games. How has the broadcasting quality been, Arnav, this time around? I asked this question because I've read at some places how ESPN was not so great in the last World Cup.
I think the main issue has been not the quality of the broadcast, but the sound of the broadcast. Not only with ESPN, but a global phenomenon has been the problem with the vuvuzelas. So what I've been hearing is that most of the channels have now installed special filters to reduce these around the stadiums, and that, in my opinion, at least from what I can say, I can only watch here television in Germany. I can say that has certainly improved the coverage, because in the first 3-4 days, towards the end, I was actually thinking of turning off the sound because the vuvuzelas were draining everything.
What is the pronunciation? Is it vuvuzela? There are some people are calling it vuvuzela, like Venezuela. So there is confusion.
I've even heard someone call it vuvuzela. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, and that was an African guy. I don't know. He might have been right and we're everyone wrong. So, you know, everyone's got their way of saying things. So I'm going to call it vuvuzela as long as no one tells me it's wrong. So it's like, you know, certain names of certain players is pronounced differently. And it's all, but I said, you know, this, I think it's one of those words which we always connect with the 2010 FIFA World Cup.
Jan, of course, he used to have broadcasting issues, he told us in the last episode in Australia, but I guess he must be getting to watch the game. Jan, the last match, the third match of the day is breakfast time for you, isn't it, in Australia?
Yeah, that's right. I think on the East Coast, it's 4:30 in the morning, and it's weird to watch football in the morning. You know, you're used to watching football with a beer or with peanuts or chips. And now you're having football while you're drinking your orange juice or eating your yogurt, and it just doesn't work. So, it does work, obviously, but it's different.
First impressions of the World Cup, apart from the vuvuzela and Diego Maradona, of course. What people noticed was the lack of goals in the first few matches, but things have changed in the last 2 or 3 days, haven't they? Arnav?
Well, certainly. I think, most of the teams were a little defensive and, you know, more concerned about ensuring that they don't concede goals. That was one of the main reasons why we had this very often unimaginative football being played. And the other things, of course, are that, you know, the weather is quite cool. I think, you know, that should not be underestimated for a lot of teams. That seems to be a problem as well. And I think that certain grounds are not up to a standard of being World Cup hosts. You've had problems with certain venues where, you know, the grass is actually coming off. So
yep.
It's a mixed thing. And I think, the last few days have shown that things will turn around. We are getting closer, you know, to the decision time, and teams will have to score. I mean, Algeria against England, I think yesterday was an example. It ended 0-0, but, you know, I think, you know, the underdogs played a good game.
You talked about the weather, and even I noticed, actually, I thought it was just me. I could see players getting tired by the end of the hour or, you know, 70-75 minutes. especially, for example, in the Slovenia game. Jan, have you noticed that kind of a thing? Or it's just me, because we know that is being played at, above sea level and stuff like that.
Well, that's true. I think the impact of playing a game at that height, it's different than playing, a training session, obviously. And I've heard it also from players who said that 10 minutes in the game already, you feel dehydrated and your saliva in your mouth is going to drink a lot. And it sort of has an effect on the physiology of the players, I think. And I also heard what was said before just now that the pitches, the actual grass pitch, are very tough to play on. It's all new grass. It hasn't been played on and it's very rugged. So the ball doesn't flow that well and it just behaves differently. And as you know, the ball itself is the problem also. So if you combine the ball with the new pitches, which is rugged, with the height, it's pretty obvious, I think, that the football quality took a bit of a knock. But after the first round, I think players used to the circumstances and we'll probably see some better football in the next couple of days.
Yeah,
I'm actually enjoying myself, by the way. So.
Yeah, of course, especially with Spain having decided to turn the World Cup on its head. Everybody has...
What a game.
Yeah, but that's... I was... Like, the other night, North Korea against Brazil.
Mm, indeed.
I mean, if the North Koreans were a little bit more lucky, I think, they could have pulled off, an historic draw. And, that would have been another one of those, matches which would have, people would be talking about in 50 years. Like, North Korea beating Italy in 1966.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that was one point, actually. I've been thinking about it. Should we look at this as the success of FIFA in spreading the game? Because there have not been any washouts, any whitewashes, I'm sorry. Like, say, Saudi Arabia back in 2002, was it? So,
The 8-1
thrashing, yeah.
Yeah, a whitewash would be wrong. I think, the thing is that what's happened is, I think, I think Beckenbauer has said it. I think Pele said it as well. There are more football. You have to take everyone seriously. So with that coming in, even if they play a defensive game, a team like North Korea can cause problems to the Brazilians, which I think even 5 or 7 years ago, the Brazilians would have at least won 5-6-0, which is, in my opinion, a very, very good sign. And then, even a favorite like Spain has got a problem against the Switzerland, where, of course, you have someone like Ott Mitzfeld as a coach who I personally know and I hold in high esteem. And they were able to turn around against the Spaniards because, they were not able to score their goals the way they thought they could. And that's the beauty of football. If football was predictable, I think none of us would follow it in the way we do.
Actually, I wasn't really surprised with well, of course, it was a surprise, Switzerland beating Spain. But Switzerland had put up a pretty good performance in the Euro as well, although it did not progress. But with a team like that, up-and-coming team like that, and a coach like that, so you really can't write off a team like that. And if Spain were taking it any easier, then, they had to face the consequences.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because players from Slovenia, they're playing in big competitions. They're playing in Germany or they're playing in England, and maybe not in top teams, but they play against top players. So physically and in terms of skills, they can all play their football. And if you have a coach like Hitzfeld or like Mourinho, it's, I think, his biggest strength as well, or who's hitting, these are guys that can create better teams by making players believe in themselves. And they work a lot more like psychologists than actual football coaches. And they can lift the level of a team up at a tremendous level. And there are no small football nations anymore. I think anyone can bump into a smaller nation and lose, like Holland tonight against Japan. I'm not 100% comfortable.
That small nation thing, there was a comment after the Germany game. We played like a small nation. Whose comment was that?
I think, I said, the big nation, the small nation thing doesn't count. But I think, what I said, I think, a few days ago in regard to Serbia came true. So, Serbia was, in my opinion, never a small nation. If they play to their potential and they play their brand of football, which is not likable, but, you're winning. So it works. It's there. It's got its eligibility as such. And I said, I think, What you need on the bigger stage, actually, with smaller nations actually getting the results which they deserve in that sense, which would actually help global football. If North Korea got a draw, I think that would have been a great push for football in Asia. Because at the end of the day, I mean, I think myself was thinking on the way of that. North Korea is actually of a standard of India. If India was playing and we actually have a better attack than North Korea, could have a Baiching Bhutia and a Sunil Chhetra actually bothered Lucio and Juan? I think they could have. And maybe that night and that performance, if India were at the top of their game, they most probably could have beaten Brazil. I know I'm dreaming a little bit,
Yeah, I think it's true. I think smaller nations go to the World Cup with different objectives. You know, like Germany goes to win the title. New Zealand goes to the World Cup to score a goal. That's their big objective. And they've done so. And I've heard from friends from New Zealanders in Australia that it's just party time in New Zealand on that little island, you know, where the sun rises for the first time for all of us on the planet. It's party time because they scored a goal. How cool is that?
In the last minute.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. In the last second, actually. What a football World Cup is about. That, you know, it's not, as I said, it's not predictable. I mean, who would have thought that Algeria would give England a run for their money yesterday? I mean, you know, if they their finishing was better and they were a little bit more organized in attack, they could have actually beaten England. And, you know, it wouldn't have been, if you've seen the match, it wouldn't have been a surprise. So that's what it's all about. I think, you know, it's not predictable. I think even Argentina against South Korea, you know, everyone's speaking in a big, big way about that 4-1 win. Well, let's put things into perspective. I mean, the South Koreans could have scored this 2-2 equalizer, and two of the goals from Higuain are actually offside. So, it's not all that clear cut as it might seem. And it's a much closer contest. I mean, Italy got away against Paraguay the other night because of a goalkeeping blunder. And I think that's one of the big stories of this World Cup, that the goalkeepers are either really, really good. You know, last night, the Algerian goalkeeper was really top of his game. Or, you know, the Algerian goalkeeper against Slovenia, you know, of course, Robert Green, you know, the big story so far. And that's part and parcel of a World Cup. You've always see a trend or something, you know, tactically we're seeing something like 4-2-3-1 being the new big invention everyone seems to be playing these days. So it's a very interesting thing to see. And that's, you know, the world of football comes together and you see a lot of different things which you don't see in continental competitions.
It's interesting how Green, the goalkeeper of England, is actually the top scorer at the moment.
By the way, that was Patrice Evra, that comment about we played like a small country. That was Patrice Evra saying that after the French game. From Arnav's talk about Serbia and Higuain's goals, refereeing has been the other, is emerging as a major talking point, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, there was a cancelled goal of the USA in the last minute, which was a bit of a big question mark, I guess.
Arnav, you blogged a bit about bringing in automation, bringing in technology into the football game.
Well, I think, you know, FIFA is the biggest obstructor of technical development. I mean, you have to see it in other games like tennis or cricket, ice hockey, where, you know, they've used technology to an extent where it actually is a great help. I remember a goal in the Olympics earlier this year in ice hockey where the ball was so fast and it actually went through the net. And they only were able to realize that the ball had actually gone through the net and actually it was a goal after getting the replay done in a slow-mo, I think 1/24th of the original speed. So I think that's the main thing. And the other thing is that what annoys me yesterday was with the refereeing was, I mean, the Spaniard was going bonkers with yellow cards. I mean, you know, this was a joke. And if you look at the referee last night, England-Algeria, where towards the end, there were a lot of similar fouls to the fouls which were happening early on between Germany and Serbia. He didn't even pull out a card. So, you know, there needs to be a uniform standard in this because teams like Germany and Serbia will have a problem if they progress because a lot of their players are going to be now on yellow cards. And that's the only thing that I'm asking for. You know, you can't just pull out cards for the sake of pulling out cards. That referee is known in Spain of pulling out loads of cards. You have to have the same standard and you can't just, and that is what actually helped the Serbs and did not help Germany yesterday in that sense. And to my feeling, it actually killed the game to a certain extent. While England-Algeria, the referee was allowing a lot of things to go on, came to have a free flow.
Don't get me started on this topic.
In fact, it was England and Algeria who failed to score. I think it was a really disappointing game last night. But we talked about FIFA not coming up in technology. Almost every World Cup, there's a new ball introduced. Why do they have to change the ball every time, every World Cup?
It's sponsoring. It's just all about money. And that's the thing that worries me the most. I fully agree with what just said about electronic devices to support the football, keep it pure, and why the FIFA people do not want to do this. I fully agree with that. And I think it's horrible. This is almost a $1 billion industry. And what we're being told you know, we, the fans, is that we're not capable of doing it in a pure way. Thierry Henry's handling of the ball against Ireland. You know, we could have stopped that. And now kids all over the world learn that if you touch the ball with the hand and the referee doesn't see it, then you can get away with it. So it is horrible. And with the ball as well, there was nothing wrong with the ball 4 years ago or 8 or 12 or 16 years ago. But every World Cup, there needs to be a new ball. No one gets to train with it and practice with it, really, because Adidas wants to keep it, under wraps until a week for the tournament. And no one is asking for it. So it's sad that all these influences.
Yeah, but that's not true. I mean, that's a saying from Fabio Capello that no one was able to train with it when not given a ball. I know for a fact that Adidas actually offered all qualified teams in January and February a chance to get 10, 15 of those balls and use them in their practice sessions before their early March FIFA international friendly fixtures. And in some leagues across Europe, yes, certainly.
Oh, okay.
And on the other side, some leagues actually were using those balls. I, for a fact, know certainly that's in the Bundesliga. Those clubs who've got Adidas as their kit sponsors were actually using the Jabulani ball towards the end of the season and playing in it. So, you know, there's a lot of wrong information being going around that the ball is not this. And even I've played with the ball to a certain extent. Yes, the ball does move a little bit differently than the others. But I think that two main factors, which you, Jan, mentioned early on, which I think are crucial, which make it very, very difficult with the ball is the pitch and the height at which, at the altitude at which you're playing. I think in Johannesburg, the ball will move totally differently than a ball moving in Cape Town or Port Elizabeth. And, you know, all these factors come together. And I think it's a marketing thing. I mean, I today in the morning wrote something in my blog about the football boots. You know, I called it the foot war, actually, because I don't know if people have been following it. You know, everyone was in the last few years, the trend was that, you know, players, especially the big players, would have their own boots and everything and, you know, stylish boots. Now, suddenly, Nike seems to be kitting everyone and anyone with their shoes in violet and orange.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you've been following that. Loads of teams are actually, even who are wearing Adidas kit, who are wearing Puma kit, most of the players are wearing those Nike shoes. So, you know, this war of the brands of a Nike, Adidas and Puma is being taken to a certain level. And I think that certain criticism in the ball is also being pushed by those brands.
That's what I heard. I heard that players complaining about the ball were players with Nike shoes.
Yes.
But England has been quite honest to admit that they didn't have the balls to win the game.
Maybe they missed other balls.
Well, they've missed a lot of balls, I think. And that's the problem. I mean, I said they've been offered those balls. Fabio Capello turned them down. And I don't know. It seems to me that every decision Fabio Capello is taking at this World Cup seems to be going the wrong way.
Yeah, indeed.
It's not only the goalkeepers. We have seen quite a few handballs. You know, in the first weekend itself, I think first three or four games, I saw three handballs by outfielders. And we've seen experienced players like Vidic and Heinze as well, you know, very embarrassing handballs, which means that they have obviously, you know, misjudged the flight of the ball. Even there have been passes put through the line for the flanks. Passes have been overhead several times. I don't know. Jan has watched football for a much longer time than us. I mean, have you noticed it now or?
No, I think you're right. I think absolutely. I mean, I have to say that, you know, the tournaments that we saw in 74, 78, 82, the number of cameras and the number of slow motions and close-ups is much less than we have today. You can see everything. You know, if someone ties his shoelaces wrong, you can see it. But I do agree. Yeah.
Yeah, but I would say, for example, Gabriel Heinze, a very good example. Gabriel Heinze tries to do it, even used to do it at Man U, used to do it at Real, and used to do it. He has done it in France as well for Lyon, for Marseille, sorry. And he tries to get away with it, and he tried to get away with it the other day. And and Vidic, I think, thought he was trying to be clever and said, listen, the referee won't see it. He's I'll get away with it as well. And some of these players are trying to be clever. I think, you know, even Cristiano Ronaldo, in my opinion, should have never finished the match the other day. I mean, towards the end, he was diving again as he used to in his early days at Man U. And the referees need to restrict that. I think that's very, very crucial. And it's not like Maradona saying, you know, oh, you know, you need to take care of Messi. It was quite funny that he said it after the Nigeria game, and there was a statistic that there were actually only four fouls against Messi. So, you know, those are very, very, you know, there is a lot of psychology being played on all sides.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's very true. Tricky and dicey. And I said, I think, you know, being a referee, I think, is the most difficult job of all. You're the loser anyway, because one or the other decision will always be wrong.
As far as Gabriel Heinz is concerned, we know where he must have learned it from.
Well, at least the hand of God will have taught him how to teach him the proper way. But I mean,
what about the tactics? Have you seen any different tactics? Because Marcelo Bielsa, I think nobody's talking about Chile so much. Chile played a good game. Lippi also has this habit of changing a few things, although he faces a lot of criticism. And Maradona, we don't know if the changes that he brings on has anything to do with tactics, or it's just, you know, his emotions.
What I see now is that I think in 86, Argentine coach Pilardo said that he expected teams to play without strikers in 15, 20 years time. And I can see that actually. And I mean, obviously there's still strikers on the team sheets, but they're not the type of strikers that we saw 20 years ago, which were the big, you know, target guys in the box, and you could bring crosses in and they would head it home or something like Crouch, for instance, the England striker. They're more like David Villa or Robin van Persie, the football players, and they're like, more like midfielders or shadow strikers, like the number 8 of Germany. Forgot his name, the 21-year-old. He is sensational. He is such a smart player, and he reminds me a lot of one of the most overlooked players in the 90s, which is Jari Liedmanen, the Ajax midfielder. The way they see space and they can control space and time almost is outrageous. They come from midfield, they make the play, but they also end up in the box to finish. And so you see a lot of strikerless teams, which is interesting. And I think Australia tried to play without a striker and it totally backfired against Germany. But that's an interesting concept. The whole team tactics is not longer about this is the model that we use for 90 minutes. It's more like in possession, this is what we do. When we lose possession, this is what we do. And the turnaround times are actually the key moments in the game. And sometimes you can have 85 minutes of relatively boring chess play, but in the 5 minutes where the turnaround is in play, that's where the game is being decided.
I mean, I would certainly agree. I think Germany versus Serbia was a very good example when Klose was sent off. Germany actually, you know, everyone expected Löw to actually bring on a striker immediately and take someone from the midfield off. And actually, he didn't. And actually, Özil was at the front, or, you know, Müller or Podolski, you know, they were in switching positions. And that was very, very interesting to see. And that actually is moving towards that, you know, the old style striker, as you call Peter Crouch or Zigic for Serbia yesterday. Those tall guys who just stand up front, get the head in, and then, you know, somebody else pushes in the ball. It worked yesterday for Serbia, but I think that sort of concept with strikers is dying out. And I think, I mean, many would say, you know, it's surprising that the Dutch are actually playing up front with someone like Van Persie, even though, you know, in many would say Van Persie is actually not a striker. That's a very interesting thing. I think coming back to Chile, yes, I think Chile was quite interesting with their sort of 3-3-1-3 sort of formation, if I was right, what Bielsa was trying to put in place. Very talented team. Of course, most of them, you know, were part of that under 20 World Cup squad, which finished third. But I think it's another of those sides who need to finish off their chances. Otherwise, Switzerland and Spain could be a little bit too big for them. I think that's the other thing at this World Cup. What I've seen is that a lot of teams are actually playing quite nice football, set football, but they're not finishing off their chances. I mean, some of these teams could actually do with an out-and-out striker who actually ensures you 3-4 goals in that tournament.
I think maybe Diego Maradona could loan one or two strikers, carrying 6 of them.
Yeah, but still, if you look at Argentina, the strikers that they have, they're also, they can, like Tevez, he can play anywhere on the pitch. I think he would make a great fullback if you tell him to do that. And Higuain is also a player who can do much more than just playing the striker. And you see how.
I think Tevez could be sort of a character like Roberto Carlos, you know, put him in as left back, but actually he's the attacking winger.
Exactly.
And you would have most probably someone else having to cover for him. But I think the other thing which I've seen as well is that a lot of these defenses actually, which are not being tested properly, don't seem to be that strong. I mean, even Argentina had their handful with their South Koreans whenever they were coming into attack. So, and yeah, I think even the Brazilians have got that sound. Well, you know, they were having problems with the North Koreans as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, true. That's well said. I think Argentina is actually vulnerable. If a team dares to put them under pressure, I think at the back they're pretty vulnerable.
It is surprising that with that kind of a defense, they have won two games now. And Germany, I don't know what happened in the second game. Of course, they had the red card. But anyway, going ahead, are we seeing any Bulgaria of 1994 or Davor Šuker's Croatia, those kind of performances?
Maybe a little bit too early for that, but I really was excited with the way Mexico played in the second game. I thought that was really, really powerful. I don't know. Do you see anyone?
Yeah, as you said, it's, I think, too early. Allow the tournament to progress a little further. I think that Ivory Coast can score goals, I think could be a very interesting prospect. If Drogba comes back, you know, I think they're there. I thought Uruguay was impressive against South Africa. I think Diego Forlan.
I agree with Uruguay.
One of the best players of the tournament so far. A really, really great performance that night. And he was everywhere. He seemed to be everywhere.
Suarez was pretty good as well, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They were really, really good. And, I think the Swiss could be someone to watch out for. I think that, you know, if the Swiss under Hitzfeld, with his knowledge, with his understanding of the game, if they continue to play their game, I mean, the Spaniards in the end were actually lucky to get away 1-0. I mean, Erin Dedioch actually needs to score that second goal. So, I think that's an interesting group with where does Spain go? I mean, I think that Spain is a typical candidate of, you know, high expectations, but not once again delivered.
Spain, yeah. If I just could quit, because I sort of tallied, they had 24 shots on goal, didn't they?
Yeah, but the funny thing was that Switzerland, I think, had 4 shots on goal, but they were all on target. And Spain had 24 shots overall, and I think 7 or 8 actually went on the goal. And Diego Bernalio, who's been having very good season here at Wolfsburg in Germany, was again at his best. So I think, you know, that again brings us to the topic of goalkeepers, on how important they are for their teams. I mean, there are certain goalkeepers like
Fernando.
Yeah. I mean, that combination does. I think Spain needs Fernando Torres. I think they very, very much need him back in top form. And I was surprised that they didn't use Fabregas in the first game.
Yeah. I don't even want to go there. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, great discussion today, and we hope we can do it again sometime in the next week with the next the second round of games. We hope that Arnav would have time again. Don't forget to check out Arnav's blogs and Arnav on ESPN in India and Jan's blogs on netherlands.worldcupblog.org. Check out our Facebook page, which is The Sports Bench, and hopefully.
The Sports Bench.
Yep. And we'll be back soon with our next episode. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.